with Greg Berg is next. Support for the morning show comes from Carthage College, where students can conduct NASA research, produce an original play, or join an in-house marketing agency as early as their freshman year. More information is available at carthage.edu. And we welcome you to the Tuesday morning show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. We probably should add to that list of things that Carthage students get to do that they can go on dinosaur digs, courtesy of the paleontology program there at Carthage. And we are going to be talking today on the morning show about the most recent dinosaur dig, so to speak, by Carthage under the leadership of Dr. Thomas Carr and Dr. Megan Seitz. We have four students who were along on the latest dinosaur dig out west, and we have them right in our studios, and we are so pleased about that. So we have, there are actually four juniors, Nathan Cochran, Chloe Harper, Jerry Dean, and Andy Wynn, along with Dr. Thomas Carr, professor of biology at Carthage, and Dr. Megan Seitz, who is the preparator in the paleontology program at Carthage. We welcome all of you to the morning show.
Thank you.
Good to have everybody here. Get nice and close there, Dr. Carr. Let's begin with you and get kind of a historical sketch, if we could, of how long Carthage has had a paleontology program and how long there have been these exciting expeditions out west as part of that program.
Right, so the paleo program at Carthage basically started when I was hired back in 2004. And the field program started in 2006. I did a sort of reconnaissance visit back in 05. And we've been going pretty much ever since. Usually it's 2 years on, 1 year off. That maps on to the J-term schedules that, you know, professors at Carthage have. And on occasion, we'll head back out for a couple of weeks if we have dinosaurs that are vulnerable to erosion. We'll go out and do a rescue collect. We've done that a couple times. I think this year was our 13th year out there, and we really had an excellent summer, a great leap forward in terms of discoveries, and the students can tell you a bit about those.
And when we're talking about there, be more specific. Exactly where is there?
We do our field work in southeastern Montana in Carter County. Historically, it's been a fairly important area of collection scientifically. The area where we collect is relatively understudied, and we actually have a full scientific team. We work in cooperation with Northern Illinois University and also the Indiana University of Pennsylvania, where we scientists there help us study various aspects of, say, the stratigraphy, geology, botany of the last million years of the age of dinosaurs, which is the slice of time that's preserved in our particular corner of Montana.
So explain just a little more about the collaboration between Carthage and these other two institutions of higher learning. Are they on site in the same way that Carthage is, and in a sense doing exactly the same thing that you are doing? And what kind of coordination is there between your efforts and theirs?
Right. So the scientists will be out with us this year. They did overlap with the students, so we are out there for a month. The first 2 weeks is part of our field course. And we were lucky enough to have Dr. Eric Morshauser out there. And we were able to include students on his stratigraphy work. So he would have students assist him for a day, and we're able to cycle through the entire group. And that really did expand the sorts of experiences that we can offer students. For the bigger picture, Morshauser is there to understand the sequence of deposition in our area and how that reflects the changing landscape and environment back then. And so that's something that students were able to assist with. Our paleobotanist, Dr. Josh Schwartz of NIU, will come out and collect. And we've had students assist him as well. I think it's a great opportunity to encourage students to assist those scientists in their work.
I don't remember us talking about this before. Is this something that has come into play more recently, or have we just had so much other matters to talk about that we've just never gotten around to this? In other words, has this collaboration between schools always been a part of these field programs?
With Dr. Morshauser, that relationship started back in 2007 or 8, I think. There was a long hiatus, but it's resumed in recent years. And with Dr. Schwartz, that started a little while ago. 2017, so relatively recent.
One other thing before we get to Dr. Seitz and then to our four students. Speaking of hiatus, I am assuming that you were on hiatus last summer. That is, thanks to COVID, there was no dinosaur dig whatsoever. Am I right about that or not?
Fortuitous in that COVID hit during our year off. And so we didn't lose any time on the field at all.
You would not have been there otherwise.
Correct, yeah.
Very good. Dr. Megan Seitz, you are the preparator in the paleontology program. You've explained this in past visits, but it's been a little while, so I think it would be good for us to be reminded of the important work that you do and how it figures in these kind of expeditions.
One of the things that we say about paleontology is that the field gets all the glory, but that's 1 month out of the year. And when we bring back everything after the field, that's really where I step in. I do work in the field as well. I go out to Montana every year, and that's an important part of what I do. But then there is that rest of the year. So when we bring back all of the dinosaurs and all the other fossils we find, what I do is to help sort through, organize them, and then if they're in need of some tender, loving care, which a lot of them are, that's what I'm giving them. So that means cleaning up the fossils if they're cracked or broken, helping to repair them, and then to put them in a safe place. So maybe a storage jacket or a very nice cushioned tray so that they're safe for the rest of their time. And that's kind of an ongoing thing. We have a backlog, which is fine with me. That means there's always more to do. And that brings in other opportunities for students as well. That's work that everybody can do.
So when you are out there in Montana, are you doing preparatory work, or are you, in a sense, stepping out of your typical area of focus and just doing plain old digging and plain old hauling and that kind of thing?
Mostly plain old digging and plain old hauling. There is a little bit of maybe triage that we do for the fossils if they are very damaged to make sure they get back to Wisconsin safely. But for the most part, we're doing what we can only do in Montana, which is finding the fossils, digging up the fossils. I can fix them back in Wisconsin. Mm. So I try to spend as much of my Montana time on Montana-focused tasks like that.
Very good. For those of you just joining us, on the morning show today, we are talking about Carthage College's paleontology program and their most recent expedition out west to Montana, one of a number of such dinosaur digs which they have done in the past. You've already heard from Dr. Thomas Carr. who is a professor of biology and heads up the paleontology program, and Dr. Megan Seitz, who is the preparator. And now we are going to meet our four students who are joining us in the studio as well. And we're going to go right around the room, and I am interested to hear from each of you about what prompted your interest in this particular field and made you want to pursue this particular path of study. And we're going to start with Nathan Cochran, who hails from Crystal Lake, Illinois, and is a junior biology major with an emphasis in paleontology. So, Nathan, where did all of this start for you?
Well, that's kind of a harder question, but I think the original starting point of my interest in paleontology is quite similar to a lot of children from the Chicagoland area. I moved to the Chicagoland area around 2004, so this was right when the Field Museum was renovating its Hall of Fossils, and of course Sioux had only just recently been put in display. And I think, as a lot of people know, the image of a multi-ton predatory killing machine is quite the impressionable image on a young man of 4 years old. And so, you know, after the first visit to the Field Museum and seeing Sue, it was inseparable, you know. Love at first sight, shall we say.
Very good. All right. Well, I hope you and Sue will be very happy. This is great. Good. Next to you is Chloe Harper, also a junior, a biology major in the paleontology track, and also a classical archaeology major as well. What is your story, Chloe, in terms of your initial interest in this?
Well, a lot like Nathan, I went to a lot of museums as a kid, but I think what really did it was seeing dinosaurs in the media and in movies a lot of the time. My parents showed me Jurassic Park when I was like 2 years old, which is way too young for a child to be watching, you know, dinosaurs ripping people apart. But, you know, it never bothered me as a kid. From day one, I was always like really interested in that sort of thing, and it was just something that never really went away, I guess. You know, a lot of kids go through their dinosaur phase. I guess it is a lot more common in guys than girls, so I guess maybe that makes it weirder. But, you know, I just really like dinosaurs a lot, and so I think maybe around high school is when I realized, hey, wait a minute, this is an actual career that you can go into. I could be looking at, you know, the remains of prehistoric creatures for the rest of my life as a job. It doesn't have to just be a passing, you know, passion or an interest, you know. It doesn't have to just be something that I tell people about and like, oh, I gotta go work at a desk job or something like that. No, I can go on digs and be with these amazing people here today. And it's all real. I went on my first dig outside of Carthage. I went back in my sophomore year of high school, and I think it was that really made me want to pursue paleontology. My parents were a little on the fence back then. They're like, okay, you know what? We'll let you go on this dig, and you'll figure out if this is really what you want. And I loved it, so I'm here to stay.
Great. And you are from just right outside of Nashville, Tennessee. So yep. Was there some place in Nashville that was kind of an exciting place to go and see dinosaurs, as Nathan had with the Chicago Field Museum?
So that's kind of odd. Nashville's not really a place that's well known for its natural history. A lot of the stuff you get down there in terms of museums is Civil War museums and those sorts of things.
Or Grand Old Opry.
I did actually spend a lot of my time in high school at the Middle Tennessee Museum of Natural History, also known as the Earth Experience, which was at the time was just sort of like getting on its feet as a museum. And so I used to volunteer as a tour guide there. They're very good people down there, but you know, it's in the middle of an area where there's not really a lot of resources for that sort of stuff. So it's kind of a little dot on a map that's kind of just it's not really, you don't see much of that stuff. Obviously, right. There's a lot of stuff older than dinosaurs or younger than dinosaurs that you can find in that area, but not really dinosaurs are known for that area.
So it's good your parents showed you Jurassic Park.
For sure.
Right.
For sure.
All right, so Chloe Harper. And next to you is Jerry Dean, also a junior biology major with a paleontology emphasis. who hails from Racine, actually, and an alum of St. Catharines, did you say?
Yes.
Yeah, very good. So where did this start for you, Jerry?
Oh, well, not that different from Nathan, really, because, like, I didn't grow up, like, in – well, not grow up. Well, I'm originally from Michigan City, Indiana, actually, which isn't that far from Chicago. So, like, I also was, like, went to the Field Museum as a little kid. I mean, I moved to Racine when I was, like, six, but mm-hmm. I still have very distinctive memories of being there at the field. Plus, you know, like, Elspeth Harper, you know, Chloe Harper here, she, you know, just watching the movies and all that also sparked an interest, or reading books with dinosaurs in them, you know, just all of that. And plus, and as for, like, you know, whether or not I wanted to be a paleontologist for a job, it's always been that. That's always what I wanted to do. Like, at my preschool graduation, I told everybody I was going to be a paleontologist.
Wow, so not an astronaut or a fireman or anything else. Paleontologist right from the start.
Yes, that's always been the goal.
I'm impressed with your focus. Very good. Finally, among our four students, Andy Nguyen, who wins the prize, whatever that is, for longest distance traveled from Huntington Beach, California, which he tells us is surfing country. So how do we line that up with your interest in paleontology? And by the way, you're also a junior biology major with a paleontology emphasis.
Well, I was a 1992 kid, and when Jurassic Park came out the following year, 1993, that was the first film I have ever seen, so that did spark that childhood interest.
The very first film?
Yep.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, with just dinosaurs in general, there's just something about these amazing creatures, you know, with their horns, their spikes, their frills and teeth that, you know, could capture the imagination of the entire planet, you know, from adults and children from all over the world. And it's just that sense of curiosity and that passion for adventure that drew me towards this field. Now, I met Dr. Thomas Carr when I was actually still in the Army, so I had many career focuses before paleontology and before Carthage. You know, I was Army Special Ops, and I worked for the United Nations combating global wildlife crime. Oh. And, you know, eventually, 15 years of that work, I decided it was finally time to kind of hang it up and plan my academic career to Carthage College. To learn under Dr. Thomas Carr and Dr. Megan Seitz, and finally pursue my childhood passion of being a paleontologist.
Wow. So how did you meet Dr. Carr?
When I was in the Army, I actually flew to an annual public symposium called PaleoFest in Rockford, Illinois, at the Burpee Museum of Natural History. And it was there that I got introduced by a friend to childhood hero Dr. Thomas Carr. Huh. And you know, it was really a starstruck moment for me to not only meet Dr. Thomas Carr, but all the other renowned paleontologists, Dr. Thomas Holtz, you know, Dr. Philip Curry. And you know, from there we just started talking, and when I was actually still in the Army, Dr. Carr invited me out to a dig, and it just kicked off from there.
Wow, very good. So you and he have something of a longer history then.
Yep.
Very good. Well, glad to have you. Glad to have all of you here in our studios. For those of you just joining us, we're talking about the most recent so-called dinosaur dig of Carthage College's paleontology program. And with us, along with our four students, Chloe, Nathan, Andy, and Jerry, are Dr. Thomas Carr and Dr. Megan Seitz. So Dr. Carr, you've already touched on the fact that you returned to this place where you have done this field work, not every single year, but essentially year after year, every other year, since I think 2006. So it sounds like at this point you began exploring a different part of this site. Tell us more about what was drawing you to this particular area.
Yeah, so to set this up, the American West is a sort of a checkerboard of different types of land. So there's private land, which is owned by landowners. There's state land, which is managed by the state. And also public lands, which are managed by the Bureau of Land Management under the auspices of the DOI. And so we collect strictly on public lands. That's for transparency and to not wind up with any entanglements over property, that sort of thing, on private land. And so We have an area of contiguous public lands that we've explored quite intensively since 2006. And there's two sections, they're called, these checkerboards. There's two sections that are non-contiguous, and we've never been to them before. And they were my target for this summer. I wanted to see what was there. And during the student session, we made it out to one of those. Well, we visited both of the sections and focused on one of them. And it turned out to be very productive. Since no one had been there before, it was as if it was a time capsule. And, you know, so the sort of things that we are seeing and collecting there would have been what it was like when people first started exploring for fossils in the American West.
Wow. So as far as you know, at least, or actually you probably do know with some certainty that paleontologists have never studied this plot of land, because I suppose if they had, there would be probably pretty clear evidence of that exploration and excavation.
Right. And if you know the backstory, that how we inherited our public lands from the University of Wisconsin-Madison group, they did make it out to those sections, but only briefly, and made no significant collection. Mm-hmm. So effectively, it was pristine.
Was this decision made because the places you have been exploring are essentially exhausted? I mean, that you have already found everything there is presumably there to find, or was it for other reasons that you decided to branch out in this way?
Yeah, so it's, since erosion is a constant process, you know, there's always new things being brought to light. It's just the density of large skeletons would drop, and so I, you know, want to see if there's more big stuff out there. And so, and also, you know, just the whole gamut, big skeletons to microsites with lots of little bones. It's just unexplored. So there's that curiosity that Andy mentioned, you know, that gnawing curiosity of, you know, what's out there. And, you know, we had to get to it eventually. You know, one thing I want our crews to find is a T-Rex, and none have surfaced yet. And so I thought, well, let's head out to these sections and see if there's anything interesting.
Right. And as it turns out, there very much was. One other thing, you said there were two non-contiguous patches that you could have explored, and you, I think, briefly visited both, mm-hmm. and then made the decision to really explore the one, which ended up yielding very, very rich results. Did you explore them both enough to know that this one was going to be so rich, or was that just a lucky guess?
It was actually neither, and Nathan can certainly attest to this, was that one of these patches was much further away than the other. We could drive up to one, and we had to hike in for an hour and a half to the other, so that was an easy decision.
So we cut down on the hiking then.
Oh, yeah.
Right, very good. That reminds me of something that I really want to ask the students about, which is the kind of conditions in which you were working. And we'll, in a second, get to kind of what a typical day was like at the dig. But were the weather conditions there what they were back here in the Midwest? I mean, brutally hot and so on, and oppressively so, or not so bad?
I guess I'll go. We were fortunate a lot of the time where it was not this unbearable heat. I mean, don't get me wrong, it was very hot, but there was, in most of the sites, a decent breeze, or we were making sure to hydrate at all times. It was certainly more so than what you'd expect in the Kenosha area, I'd say. And we had a couple days where it rained, but luckily not during field collection.
Day one, we had hail.
Yeah,
remember
that?
We had hail.
Wow.
We came in on the vans, and it was pouring. And then all of a sudden, we hear the clack, 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 clack all over the house we're staying in. I look outside, and it's the entire field is white with ice balls.
Wow. Welcome to Montana.
Yeah. But as Dr. Carr alluded, I was one of the few students who went out to, I believe it was Section 8, on our self-described death march. So, you know, that was really the only time out in the field where I realized, oh God, this is why they call it the Badlands, huh? I think we were fortunate to have fairly fair weather.
Very good. So describe to us what a typical day on this dig was like, I mean, and what your assignments were.
All right. So I was actually there for during the volunteer week because I've been out there, taking the class like a couple years ago because like I've been in and out of Carthage for personal reasons. So I'm actually older than like, you know, Nathan and Chloe. But anyway, not really important. So we would go out in the morning to like the quarries, you know, so that's where like we have like the big skeletons that we're digging out of the ground. And or more like just parts of the bigger skeleton really, but and then like we do that till like, you know, 11 or 12, depending on the weather conditions. And then we would go back to the lodge for lunch and such, and then after that we would go out and then prospect, which is, you know, searching for new sites and such.
Mm. So in the morning, you're working on specimens that have already been found and working on excavating them or extracting them from the ground. And then in the afternoon, you're looking for new things.
Correct.
Great. Andy, can you expound on what that second part is, the exploration part?
So in paleontology, the term for, you know, for just practically walking around and looking for fossils, whether it's you know, large scale animals, you know, macro fossils, or smaller pieces of bone washed away by a river, which, you know, microfossils, we call those microsites. The term we use is prospecting. So the you know, when I went on my first dig with Dr. Carr, you know, it, you know, like I tell people, that was my first paleontology expedition. I'm actually on my seventh one now, and it's the Hell Creek Formation where we do dig, which, you know, composes of sedimentary deposits from the Late Cretaceous. It gives you the best of both quarry work and prospecting. You know, you want a large animal, you're generally going to get a Triceratops, and you know, you want to find those small microsites and, you know, those potentially new macro sites. You know, and that's what prospecting is. And Southeast Montana really does give you the lay of the land of these valleys and these ridges and these flat plains, to where, you know, on one end you're on top of a mountain working on a Triceratops quarry, and on the other end you're hiking 6, 7, 8 miles out, you know, with just this gorgeous scenery, looking for all these micro and macro sites.
And then what are you exactly looking for? And are you looking for things that are just visible without sifting anything away? I mean, is that what you're exactly looking for?
You know, contrary to popular belief, when the public thinks of, you know, paleontologists looking for bones, they think where we have to dig, you know, 20, 30 feet into the ground and create this, you know, this giant crater. But no, so, you know, the fossils are eroded, you know, and generally your head's to the ground, and you could even see small bones from probably 15, 20 yards away on top of a slope, because these you know, these microfossils, they're very exposed. You know, they do come in different coloration due to the fossilization process, you know. And you could be walking, you know, down a slope, and you look 25 yards away, and you just see this shiny bronze-like shape from, you know, from that slope. And you walk, upon closer inspection, it's a two-foot Tyrannosaurus. So really, it would take you less than an hour for people to come out and to realize that within less than an hour, they could be trained to identify fossils from the sediment that's all around. So,
very good. So it's things that are visible to the naked eye. You just have to know what they are. I mean, you have to be trained to recognize what it is that you're seeing. So, as I recall, Dr. Carr, from your initial description, this site that you were exploring this summer was especially rich in Triceratops. And did you have any cause to expect that you were going to find more than a half dozen of these specimens there?
No. Usually in our contiguous area, discovery rate of Triceratops is one a year, and it's usually me who's cursed with finding it. And but this year, in our new area. I went in with that same expectation, and I think one thing that's important to for me to mention is that in terms of the field course, it's a cooperative venture between Carthage and the Milwaukee Institute of Art and Design. And so our crews included MIAD students and also Carthage students. And so the crew that was with me out to this new section, it was actually a MIAD student who found the first Triceratops specimen of that new unexplored area. And that initial discovery was followed relatively quickly in the following days by six more Triceratops. And three of those were found by MIAD professor Matthew Lee, and the other three were found by me. I was finding a Triceratops an hour. Now, I would have preferred that students would find those. I'm not out there, you know, I don't need to find any more things. It just happened to be the path I took. It took me right to three Triceratops eroding out. So that was just the start of it. And so, you know, we took out other students were out there finding other things. But I think those seven trikes are sort of emblematic of how productive that new area was.
Wow. So help us understand that process once you have found something. Once you have found, for instance, a Triceratops, what is the process like by which that gets extracted out of the ground, and is that work that you are part of?
Well, as soon as we find something that's like bigger than, say, a microfossil, so when Andy was talking about microfossils earlier, a lot of times they're on the surface. We're not actually allowed to dig very deep into the sediment. We have to go and get permits and those sorts of things so we can go deeper. And it's only usually the next year when we get to go deeper and start excavating things like big Triceratops. So I'm pretty sure I did get to help pull some fossils out of the ground that had been found in years prior. I did not actually get to see any of the new fossils, but we're supposed to put tarps over them so that they can be found by expeditions in the next years because that protects them from erosion over time. Because again, like everybody's been saying, the site is constantly eroding, and Badlands is an area where the rate of erosion is greater than the rate of deposition of sediment. So you are always getting erosion, and new stuff is always tumbling out of the exposures and things like that. And so in order to protect the fossils, you have to make sure they're going to withstand that erosion for the next year. And so it's a long process of actually getting to find the fossil to when you pull it out, but getting to be there for pulling it out is something else. Just seeing, peeling back that tarp and seeing all that is amazing.
I bet.
It's worth the wait.
Yeah. So the Triceratops specimens, for instance, that were found this summer had to be left there.
Yeah, we... so there was... Yes, we had to leave them out there. We preferred not to. And so for the most vulnerable specimens, one was a Triceratops shoulder that Mason, the MIAD student, found. And I found an articulated Triceratops skull just lying upside down on the hillside. And so that one was just, you know, lying out. It wasn't just the tip of the thing, it was the whole skull.
So you could just pick it up and walk away with it.
I wish. They're really big. What we had to do was put on what's called a winter jacket, so that's plaster and burlap. Separated from the bone by a paper towel, and so that protects the specimen for the winter, and we'll go back next summer and get it. Chloe mentioned tarps, so we did tarp the shoulder, but with upside down trike, it was just, there is no way to secure a tarp on a hillside, so upside down trike is out there right now with its jacket on it. Somewhat protected from the elements, so I'm going to be worrying about upside down trike all winter.
And so it's too big for you, or even you with a couple other students to move? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, so what we have is a skull where most of it's underground. And so what I can see is the palate and the underside of the frill. And the horns are probably extending straight down into the hill as well. So so there's a lot of depth to these structures. And there's just no way to collect it. And as Chloe mentioned, it went beyond our square meter. So we need a permit to do that, and we will apply for a permit and get it next summer.
Right. And so when you find, for instance, that specimen, that in a sense belongs to you. I mean, it's not possible for other paleontologists to come along and take that.
Well,
is that
since
right?
We collect on public lands, it belongs to the people of the United States. The fossils don't belong to Carthage. They don't belong to the Dinosaur Discovery Museum. They belong to the country, the citizens of this country. And that's a very important distinction to make. So we are stewards. And just in terms of the paleontological field activity out there, the area that we collect is exclusive to us. So there's sort of a mutual understanding between paleontological teams that we don't go into each other's territory, so to speak, or each other's turf. So there is that level of proprietariness.
Very good. I want to turn back to the students and hear from each of you some of your most memorable moments from this expedition out to Montana this past summer. What were some particularly interesting moments that you were particularly or personally involved in? Whatever sorts of things you want to share. Starting with Nathan.
I think my two my favorite moments were definitely two of the finds I found while working out in the field. The first was while doing quarry work in a quarry called McElhaney Trike, which is of course this large Triceratops in the side of a hill. I believe this was the second or third day of quarry work, so we were just getting the overburden and some of the rock that was on top of the Triceratops off so we could, you know, get into there, have a platform. And throughout the day, we were finding mostly microfossils. So we had small fish skull bits, gar scales, so like very similar to modern gar, just these little beautiful, like penny-sized scales. And it was one of these days where I thought I had picked out a gar scale. But then I noticed, oh, wait, gar scales don't curve like that. And I had picked out this beautiful little tooth of a carnivorous dinosaur known as a dromaeosaurid, or at least that's what we think it is. And for context, these animals in the area we're digging in are quite rare. It is animals of that size don't tend to fossilize well in the area, and it's possible that they're just rare in the formation as a whole, even in life. So it was quite the exciting find. And then I know Dr. Carr mentioned Dr. Morschauser and his sedimentology, and I was out there on his day, and after, you know, digging 4-meter trenches into the side of a hill, I was pretty tired, but I ended up falling down a bit of a slope in a site called Shark Spine, where, lo and behold, I fell on this little section of jaw of an animal called Edmontosaurus, which normally is this 40-foot behemoth of a Cretaceous plant eater, probably favored by T-Rex for its large size and large amount of meat, but this one in particular was incredibly small. So it was a suction of lower jaw, barely longer than my finger. So it's this little baby, and babies, you know, as many people know, babies are quite fragile, so their presence in the fossil record is quite rare. So that was definitely the highlight of my trip.
Wow. So in other words, we don't find many baby specimens. And so when you do, it's a very special treat. Wonderful. Very good. Chloe, do you have something you want to share?
Oh, man. Dr. Seitz can tell you that they almost lost me one time because I started rolling around on the floor of McElhaney Track. I was working with Nathan over here. So we like to rotate around our places in that quarry a lot because there were a few of us. There's a handful of students and then two of the instructors. So we had half of us were from Carthage, and then the other half was from the Milwaukee Institute of Art and Design, the MIAD kids. Hmm. So we all made fast friends. We were all, you know, thick as thieves, and we were joking and clowning on each other. And Nathan here, he goes... He has to get up from the quarry for a personal hike, and so I move over and take his seat in the quarry. And not 2 minutes after he left, I'm raking away sediment in the middle of this quarry, and I'm just casually like poking at it with a trowel, and out rolls a complete, perfectly preserved Tyrannosaurus Rex tooth beneath where he had been sitting. If he hadn't gotten up, I wouldn't have been digging there.
Wow.
And it was beautiful. This was a childhood dream come true. Mm. Like, I jumped up. Again, I was rolling around on the ground just yelling, "Oh my gosh, I found a Rex. I found a Rex."
Wow.
And I just vividly remember Dr. Seitz saying, "And we've lost Harper." it was such a rush of happiness and joy. It was like I was a kid again. It was everything I had ever dreamed of when I wanted to pursue paleontology was there in my hand.
Wow.
And I got to surprise Dr. Carr with it later, and he told me it was from a juvenile, another baby animal.
Wow.
It was younger than 11 years, I believe. That's, yeah, younger than 11. So it was a really young individual, and it was beautiful. One of my most memorable moments from that trip.
Wow.
The second one, because I know you asked for two, was so when we were prospecting, like Andy was talking about earlier, if you find a new site, you have the opportunity to name it. And so among the little group that we had going, it was a little bit, "Oh, we could find a new site today. Oh, we could go check something new out. We might get to name something," right? Mm. And so it was always an exciting part of the day whenever we got to go prospecting, because that was your chance to get immortalized in the site and for future digs to remember, "Oh, hey, this is a cool site that this person found. Maybe they fell on their face and nearly hit a bone, or maybe they walked into something cool by accident." It was always a really exciting opportunity because there was always that chance. And one of the MIAD kids and I, we were driving on the way to one of our normal sites called Madison Sharkspine, and we spotted this weird arch-like formation in the distance. It was some sort of cave that had been eroded out of the hillside, because, again, the Badlands, the rate of erosion is greater than the rate of deposition, so you always have stuff eroding. And so we had, like, heavy rains for a little while, and so now there was just this big supernatural looking kind of archway. It was so surreal. And so me and Raphael, one of the MIAD kids, we were like, "You know what, we're gonna go hike to that and see if there's anything in there." It was an incredible trip over there, and it turns out there was an entire cave system in there. we walk inside this arch, and I sit down my bag because it's a long hike over there from the trail, and I'm just like, "Whoa!" And I sit down, and suddenly Raphael's head just completely disappears underground. And I'm like, where'd they go? And they pop back out, and they say, there's more cave down here. And so I have to crawl through on my belly to get where they're trying to show me. And it opens up into this big old sinkhole. And they're just standing there with a deer antler in their hand saying, "Hey, look what I found."
Mm.
And I nearly put my hand down on bone. And I look down, and there is a big, long piece of bone, probably Pleistocene, which is Ice Age in age. So not dinosaurs, but still something really interesting all the same. And I nearly stepped on it, trying to come out of that cave on my belly. And it was like Andy was saying, it's really captured that spirit of adventure because we were going into uncharted territory. Nobody had ever gone in this place before. Mm. And we found something new there. We found bone. We found stuff that we could take back and say, we found this at this new site. So I got to name it. Mm. And that was that really made my trip a lot better because I got to be part of that whole experience.
Wow. I can well appreciate that. Fantastic. Great. Jerry Dean.
All right. So one of my stories is going to be just about me specifically, and then another one was about somebody else who was like a Carthage grad, who's now a Carthage graduate, who was there at the time that I just happened to be nearby for. So the first one, and they actually both happened the same night. So mine was mostly just like we were in that, you know, that section that Dr. Carr mentioned that was relatively unexplored. And, you know, everybody was sort of, like, looking over in this area, and they were like, you know, maybe you should just, like, you know, spread out so we can, you know, maybe find more stuff. And I was like, okay. So I just sort of walk and sort of, like, maybe, like, 30 feet, 100 feet. I'm not very good at estimating distance. Yeah, probably, like, 100 feet now that I think about it. Just east, and all of a sudden I just come across all this bone that's just all over the ground, because that's you find that a lot. And it was just, you know, there's a bunch of Triceratops bones all over. And and like Harper mentioned earlier, if we find a site, we get to name it. So this was like my first time being able to do that, even though it's like my third year out there. So, or at least that I remember. And I was like, what's the most ridiculous name I can come up with that's not inappropriate, of course? Mm-hmm. It was Jerry's Bonesplosion. And then, like, I don't know, like maybe like half an hour after this, I remember just hearing a bunch of commotion sort of off to the right. And I was like, you know, where everybody else was, and where some other people were. I was like, what's going on? And, you know, Amelia, who, like I said, is a Carthage graduate of this program and is currently a PhD student at the American Museum of Natural History, she found what was a fragment of the dome on, like, a Pachycephalosaurus skull. So, for reference, like I said, it's the dome heads, you know, the Pachycephalosaurus. So, and that's one of the rarest fossils out there, correct? Wow. Yeah, that's what I thought. So, yeah. That was kind of even though I wasn't like right there for it, that was still exciting.
You were adjacent to the excitement, which is almost the same thing. Yeah, very good. And finally, Andy Nguyen, and we have just about a minute or so, but I'm going to invite you back. So, give us a minute's worth of your highlights.
Well, definitely, my highlight was actually our last season in 2019 when I was with Dr. Thomas Carr and his sister Sula. And I found a juvenile Triceratops, you know, and that was the first large individual specimen that I was able to discover in my career. Wow. So it was definitely a Dr. Alan Grant moment in Jurassic Park when he looks at Dr. Ellie Sattler, portrayed by Laura Dern, and says, Ellie, this is the most beautiful thing I ever saw. And I'm on top of this Triceratops, and it's just this gorgeous outlook. You know, you can't beat it. It was a pretty hot day, but the scenery, you just can't beat the scenery. And I'm over there working on a site with tears going down my eyes because it's a childhood dream come true. So
right,
So that was definitely a fun year.
That's great. I want to invite you back, and I was serious about that, to talk about some of this other work that you have done in terms of anti-poaching and so on, which is really important work and somewhat related in that. So I hope we can have a conversation about that. I would really like to have you back. So Dr. Seitz, very briefly, everything got safely back to Carthage, and now you're hard at work doing your preparatory work?
We're getting started. We brought back, I think, 11 or 12 field jackets. It'll be a while until we get to many of those, and we're slowly sorting through the bins of the smaller things, and every day we find something new that we didn't even know that somebody had collected last year. Dr. Carr and I aren't able to see everything. There's so much going on, so a lot of it is surprises to us, too, and we're always hoping for the next great find.
Wonderful. So even when you're just back in little old Carthage College, the discoveries continue. A final quick thought, Dr. Carr?
Well, just on that note, just last week we found a complete section of a bird foot. So this is an extinct bird called an opposite bird. And a student found the entire bone is made of three delicate bones all fused up at one end, technically called a tarsal metatarsus. But that really set the bar high for, you know, for the rest of the fossils. We're hoping that we see more stuff like that.
Wonderful. Well, what an exciting time this has been for all of you, and I'm so glad we could talk about it today on the morning show. Dr. Thomas Carr, Dr. Megan Seitz, and four students involved in all the fun, Nathan Cochran, Chloe Harper, Jerry Dean, and Andy Wynn. Thank you all for being part of the morning show today. This was tremendous fun.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Tomorrow on the morning show, I'm going to be speaking with Dr.